Proof, the novel by Dick Francis, dramatized by Ernest Dudley, with Nigel Havers as Tony Beach. Part 7.
I awoke that Saturday morning with a start, and for a moment I couldn't remember why I felt so apprehensive. And then it all came flooding back. The robbery at my wine shop, the man who was almost certainly Paul Young with a shotgun, and the shooting of Charter Junior. I averted my mind from the temptation to pull the covers over my head and abdicate. I knew I had to ring Flora, but I put the moment off, shaving and making coffee. And then the phone rang. Flora had beaten me to it.
Is that you, Tony?
Flora.
He's dead, Tony.
Oh, my dear. I'm so sorry.
I'm speaking from the hospital. I don't want to leave him. Not yet.
Look, is there anything I can do?
Yes, that's why I phoned. There is something.
Yes, what is it?
His diary. Destroy it, please, Tony.
But
that's
I can't.
That's all he said just before he... My diary, destroy my diary. Please, Tony, I promised him.
It's all right, Flora. I'll do it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Tony. I must go now, thank you.
I drove to the shop, the shambles ahead beckoning with all the appeal of a cold swamp. On the car radio, there was an item about the shooting. The police hadn't been able to trace the man who drove away from the scene of the crime, and they were proceeding with their inquiries. I sat in my tiny office, staring morosely at the mess, postponing cleaning up or doing anything about the washroom window the thieves had broken to get in. Gerard arrived a few minutes later to rouse me out of my apathy.
Charter Junior's dead.
Yes, I know. Flora phoned me. And Paul Young seems to have got clean away and vanished into thin air.
Yes, I'm afraid so. Altogether too easy if they'd managed to pick him up. He seems to be a resourceful gent.
Flora asked me to destroy the diary. It seems she promised Junior just before he died.
And did you?
Yes.
Oh.
No, but don't panic. I copied out the relevant entries first. But at least when Mr. Wilson questions me, I can say I haven't got the bloody thing. It seemed the least I could do for Flora in the circumstances.
Though it seems a futile gesture as far as keeping Junior's name as pure as driven snow is concerned. After all, he was an accomplice in an armed robbery.
Yes, quite right. Look, I thought we might mull over some of those entries again. Meet at Diamonds, go to DN for WG. Now, R, H and DN are clearly initials of names, but WG isn't in caps.
No. Well, we're checking out Diamonds right now.
Huh.
Oh, by the way, you remember you told me that Larry Trent apparently supplied drink to the Martineau Park caterers?
According to Orkney Swale.
Well, my people have checked out the caterers. They're called Quigley's Quality House Provisions.
And?
They're large and respectable.
Doesn't look too promising.
The man to talk to at Martineau Park is called Vernon. I wondered if you might like to drive out there and see what you can find out.
For me?
Does
this come under the heading of consultancy?
Well, I've one or two other lines of inquiry to chase up, and I thought since you know the place and racing's in your blood...
Well, there's no racing there today. There's nothing for a couple of weeks, to the autumn carnival jump race meeting at the beginning of November.
There you are, then. There'll be no crowds. No hassle.
Yeah, for all I know, there'll be no catering department either. I mean, it may all be locked up.
In that case, you can turn around and drive straight back, no problem.
Well, yes, I suppose Mrs. Palissy can cope on her own.
Of course she can.
Yeah.
I'll drop in later to see how you got on.
All right. I drove out to Martineau Park with no idea what level of activity to expect in the way of managers, maintenance, etc. The gates to the members' car park stood open, at least. No sign of security. It was eerie to see the place deserted. Without people, the building seemed huge and threatening. There was no one around the weighing room area, and I went curiously inside. Empty benches, rows of pegs, empty racks for saddles. Returning to fresh air and my allotted task, I came to a door marked Clerk of the Course. I knocked and pushed it tentatively open.
Can I help you?
Well, yeah, I'm looking for the caterers.
Delivery entrance?
Yes.
Along the back of the stands, far end. Turn right, you'll see the celebration bar. There's a green door in there.
Oh, thanks very much.
The green door was propped open, so I walked in. I found myself in a dimly lit passage that I realised must run the whole length of the stand. I walked past painted doors marked stores A, B and C, till I came to a turning into the well-lit office section. Suddenly, a phone rang.
I'll answer that, Mervyn. You go and shift those beer cases. Put them in store D. And tell those men not to bring in the next load till I'm off the phone, right?
I could hear his voice answering the phone and could see a portion of his back view through the glass. Before I decided to eavesdrop or retire, another man came hurrying round the corner and straight into the office.
Vernon!
Yes, look, I'll be with you. I'm on the phone.
He didn't spare me a glance, but to my startled eyes, he was unmistakable. It was Paul Young.
Move yourself. I haven't got all day.
He might not have taken particular note of me at the Silver Moon Dance, but he certainly got a good look at me last night. If he saw me now, he'd know me. And the idea filled me with numbing, paralyzing fright. There were no nooks or crannies to hide in, just solid blocks and columns of cases of drink. To get to the outside world, I'd have to walk past all that glass, and he'd be sure to see me. With atavistic terror, I began to climb. I climbed the highest, most extensive rack, non-vintage champagne. Consultancy hadn't included getting this close to Paul Young. What a laugh.
I tell you, Vernon, I'm not satisfied. I want to see for myself.
But I've told you...
I don't give a sod. You're a twisty bastard, Vernon. I've warned you twice, and I don't trust you. By my reckoning, you should still have 24 cases of scotch left here.
Your list won't be up to date. I sold a lot to that wine bar in Oxford.
Well, let's check on the stocks. And God help you if you've been cheating me, Vernon.
It's all down the far end.
It had better be.
I thought of escape, but knew that my first movement would alert them. Well, if the worst came to the worst, I could defend myself by throwing champagne bottles. After all, champagne bottles were reinforced, because if they broke, they were like mini grenades exploding with lethal flying glass. Yes, I'd fight with champagne if I had to.
The party's over, Vernon. You're short of 28 cases. Enough's enough. We're through. I'll remove the rest of my stock tomorrow afternoon.
If you break me, I'll see you regret it.
The last person who threatened me was Zarak. Tomorrow afternoon, Vernon, 2 o'clock sharp, you'll be here.
Bastard. Mervyn! There's more cases of Paul Roger, white foil over there. Go and count it. They let us short 2 cases last time.
Paul Roger, white foil, was what I was lying on. If they were busy with that, they couldn't help seeing me. The only possible safety lay with the delivery men who were offloading gin at the far end. Numb with fright, I slithered down backwards. And walked towards them.
Blimey, where'd you come from?
I'm just checking. Have you finished?
Near enough. You want to sign our chit?
Oh, right, yes.
We'll be off then.
They left the forklift truck where it was and set off for the outside door. Almost without thinking, I grasped the truck's handle and pushed it along in their wake. Vernon was coming towards me, accompanying an incoming load of Paul Roger. He gave me the smallest frown as he walked past. No shouts, no pursuit, no Paul Young. I turned into the main passage, only a few yards from the free, open air, and there he was, Paul Young, standing in the entrance as if waiting. Suddenly, there was a shout from behind me.
Oi! You there! I didn't see you come in.
Maintenance. Just checking.
Paul Young remained motionless at the outer door, watching something outside. I turned towards the only alternative, the long passage under the stands. I gave Vernon a wave and set off, controlling a terrible urge to run. Don't look back. Don't run. I went faster and deeper, to I didn't know where. The passage ended in the kitchens, vast, cavernous halls.
Hey, wait a minute. Are you there?
Vernon was a better prospect than Paul Young, but better by far was to vanish as inexplicably as I'd appeared. I sped round two corners, nowhere to hide.
Where are you? Come out of there! Show yourself!
Desperately, I turned into what looked like a short, bleak corridor leading nowhere. But then I saw them. A row of four small lifts for transporting food up to the stands. Dumb waiters. I scrambled into the nearest and pushed button three.
Hey, you! Answer me!
The lift rose smoothly, quietly taking me upwards like a human sandwich, or perhaps sacrifice. When it stopped, I jumped out. At another time, I might have laughed. I was on the level of Orkney Swale's box. If Vernon had heard the lift's electric hum, he might be on his way up. He'd know every cranny. At last I ran, fear in my heart, ran to Orkney's box, praying the door wouldn't be locked. It wasn't. I stood in the corner of the box, waiting. For a long time, nothing happened. No shouts, no Vernon. Time stretched agonizingly out. I'd almost got to the point of thinking it was safe to move when I saw him, down in front of the stands. He was scanning the length of them, searching for movement, searching for sight of me. Beside him, looking up, was Paul Young. I stood frozen, afraid even to blink. At last, the two men gave up their inspection and walked out of sight. If they were searching methodically, and I didn't move, they would eventually find me. But I didn't move. I couldn't. For a whole hour, like a mouse in his hole. In the car park, I could see my elderly serviceable vehicle. Next to it, someone had parked a black Rolls-Royce with tinted windows. When I'd been in the box for 2 hours, Paul Young returned to his Rolls and drove it out of the car park. I'd had enough. With a bravado born out of sheer funk, I went into the stands and down the stairs, my heart thudding. The owner's and trainer's staircase led to the weighing room, and then the clerk of the course's office. I was nearly there. But I knew if Vernon or Paul Young were to jump out at that moment, I would literally scream.
I say.
Yeah.
Do you know the caterer's stall manager's looking for you?
Yes, I just met him along there.
Did you?
Hmm.
Righto. He wanted to know your name. I thought that was odd, since you must have been with him for hours.
Yes, very odd. Anyway, it's Cash, Peter Cash. He knows now.
Ah. Well, that's all right, then.
It was still only 3:45 when I got back to the shop, but I felt as if I'd lived several lifetimes. I headed straight for the washroom, emerging some time later, pale and still shaken, and dispatched a miniature brandy. Gerard phoned an hour or so later. I filled him in on my day's excitements.
What? Paul Young? Good grief, I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault.
No, I shouldn't have sent you there.
Well, you couldn't have known. But I'm afraid we're no nearer discovering who Paul Young really is.
Well, we now know for sure he's Larry Trent's brother, for what it's worth. My office traced Larry's birth certificate yesterday afternoon. He's illegitimate. Mother Jane Trent, father unknown.
Well, what should we do? Do you want me to tell the police about today?
Not yet. Let me think it over. Will you be in your shop all evening?
Until 9, yes.
Right.
I opened my doors at 6, trying to raise genuine interest in my customer's needs. I felt limp, as if after an illness, and wondered how Gerard survived a lifetime of chasing villains with every nerve coolly intact. He turned up just before closing time.
Hello, Tony. I don't suppose you could meet me at 9 in the morning at Martineau Park.
Well,
Good. I had a great deal of trouble running the proprietor of the caterers to ground, but he's agreed to meet us there. We both thought it best to find out what's been going on before we bring in the police.
So why do you need me?
Because you'd know the scotch and wine if you tasted them.
Oh, right.
He says he's no expert himself.
You haven't forgotten Paul Young will be there at 2:00?
No, that's why we must go early, before he removes anything. Once we're sure the whiskey is at Martineau, we'll alert the police and they can take him when he arrives. Can I count on you?
Yes.
Good.
Next morning, I found myself once more outside the green door that led into the catering section. This time it was firmly locked. Dead on nine, the proprietor arrived with an air of self-importance. A nautical blazer, cravat, mid-30s, aping the manner of 50.
Miles Quigley.
Gerard McGregor.
So, you must be...
Terry Beach.
Ah, yes, the wine man. Well, let's see what this is all about, shall we? Although I'm certain you're wrong. Mr. Vernon has worked for our family for years.
Yeah, that's the first locked door I've seen on this race course.
Really?
Hmm.
They do tend to open everything for easy maintenance between meetings in the daytime, but I assure you everything's locked at night. We are very security conscious because of the alcohol stored here. There's a security alarm with a heat-sensitive system. If anyone goes into the store when the system's on, the alarm rings both here and in the main police station at Oxford.
Who else has keys to the system besides you?
Vernon, of course. I'd trust Vernon with my life.
Only you and Vernon?
That's right. Come this way, gentlemen.
Is yours a family firm?
Basically. My father's still chairman, but as good as retired. I run things now. Have done for 3 years. This is a big firm, you know, and growing fast. I've streamlined the whole business considerably.
Were spirits by the tot in the private boxes your idea?
What? Well, yes. Much more profitable. Got to answer to the shareholders, after all.
Who chooses and orders your liquor?
Vernon. He's done it for years.
And pays the bills?
Oh, no. We've a computerized system. The checked invoices go from here to the office 2 miles away to be paid through the computer. Saves time. I installed it. We keep beer here, as you see. If you'd come this way, we can inspect the wines and spirits.
Where were you yesterday?
Lying up there, on the Paul Roger, frightened sick.
You'd have been a fool not to be. There's not much doubt Paul Young would have killed you if he'd found you. It's easier a second time, I'm told.
God.
Fear in that situation was normal. Keeping your nerve in spite of fear was real courage.
Shall we start? Now, where are these suspect cases? I see nothing wrong. It all looks exactly the same as usual.
Vernon must have been able to tell one from another. He wouldn't risk not knowing his fake stuff at a glance.
I don't believe all this. Vernon's a most efficient manager.
Perhaps if he could find the wine, it might be easier.
I found the Saint-Estèphe and Saint-Emilion behind a fronting wall of unimpeachable Mouton Cadet. Quigley consented to opening a case of each and removing a bottle. I produced my trusty corkscrew and a polystyrene beaker, which would have given Henri Tavel a fit. Well, not Saint-Estèphe. Shall I try the Saint-Emilion?
You can't be right. It's come from a respectable supplier, Vintners Incorporated. Their name's stamped on the box.
Taste the Saint-Emilion.
It's the same.
What?
Do Vintners Incorporated supply Bell's Whiskey also?
They're a well-known firm.
Anyone can cut a stencil and slap the name onto anything.
I can't believe this. Oh, very well. Let's try the whiskey.
We moved on to the mountainous block of Bell's Whiskey and immediately found a section at the back with Vintners Incorporated emblazoned on the side. I tasted it and waited. Let the aftertaste develop. Let the nuances linger in the mouth and throat.
He can't tell. There's nothing wrong with it, I told you.
Ever had complaints?
What caterer hasn't? But none of them have been justified.
Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't Bell's. Too much grain, hardly any malt. It's what we're looking for.
What do you mean? How could Vernon be so disloyal? It's incredible.
What the bloody hell's going on here? What do you think you're doing? Oh, Miles. I didn't see you. I didn't expect.
Vernon just dried up as he sensed something ominous in our stillness. His gaze shifted warily from Quigley to Gerard and finally to me. I was a shock of cataclysmic proportions to him. He came back with us to the office.
The fraud, as I see it, was as follows. You, as liquor manager, Vernon, have ordered extensively from a certain supplier and in return received a sizable commission, a kickback. However, what your supplier provided was not as described on the invoices. Your firm was paying for Bell's whiskey and fine wines and receiving liquor of a lower quality. You knew this,
and it considerably increased your pay.
Rubbish!
Your provider chose the name of a respectable supplier, sent you everything stenciled Vintners Incorporated. You received normal invoices, and your finance department sent checks in return. Well, they were perhaps negligent in not checking that the address printed on the invoice was truly that of Vintners Incorporated, but, well, once an address has been entered into a computerized system, it's seldom, if ever, checked. The computer goes on paying out without question.
Vernon, how could you? You've been with the family for years.
Yes, and what have I got to show for it?
Who is this supplier?
No one. It's all lies.
Well, he's coming here this afternoon.
You bloody spy.
You're afraid of him, aren't you? And why not? You don't want to follow Zarak to the cemetery.
I know who you are. You're that bloody interfering wine merchant, Beach.
I suppose you turned up early today to get all the Vintners Incorporated cases out of here and be long gone before your supplier arrived at two.
Bollocks!
It's possible that Mr. Quigley won't press charges if you cared to answer some questions.
What? Why shouldn't I?
Well, the shareholders might be rather surprised to hear in a court case about certain, shall we say, inefficiencies in the running of your operation.
Very well, I agree.
How can I be sure he won't have the police here the minute I say anything?
Because Mr. Quigley will give you an assurance, and you can believe it, can't he, Mr. Quigley? Whatever you say here won't be taken down and used in evidence.
No prosecution.
But only on condition that we consider your answers to be frank. So, how close were your ties with Zarak at the Silver Moon Dance?
I knew him. He used to come here for wine if they ran out. Then he said he knew of a good fiddle. If I was interested, he'd let me in.
Did you meet the owner of the Silver Moon Dance, Larry Trent?
Yeah. His brother, well, half-brother, he was the supplier.
And his name?
Paul Young. He was bloody good to Larry Trent. Let him strut around pretending to own the Silver Moon Dance. Gave him money for his horses.
Why did Paul Young kill Zarak?
I don't know.
I think you do.
After Larry was killed in the accident, Zarak said he wanted the Silver Moon Dance. Wanted it given to him on a plate. Sort of blackmail or else.
Paul Young justified the killing to you.
Explained it. He came here with all the Silver Moon Dance liquor piled up in his rolls. He made three trips, said he was loading it with Zarek's help. That the place had been busted and he had to get the stuff out. The third time he came, he was sort of excited. Said I'd hear Zarek was dead and to keep my mouth shut. Jesus. When I heard how Zarek had died, it made me want to puke. He wasn't a bad guy. I never meant to get mixed up in murder. It was just supposed to be an easy fiddle for good money.
How long's it been going on?
About 15 months.
And where did the fake liquor go to?
Where? Oh, we sold it in the bars here. All the other sports fixtures Quigley's catered for. Weddings, dances, the lot.
Oh, my God.
Anywhere people wouldn't notice the difference.
Most people can't. Not in a crowded place. Too many other smells.
Do you know precisely what whiskey you were selling in the Bell's bottles?
It was Scotch.
Hmm. Have you ever heard of a young man called Kenneth Charter?
Who? No.
Did Paul Young plan with you the robbery at Mr. Beach's shop?
No. Well, he borrowed one of our vans, that's all. Their own Vintners Incorporated delivery van was in for repairs. He said they'd keep it for a while till the heat died down, then dump it. But it all went wrong anyway, so it was just a bloody mess for nothing.
All right. Lastly, what is Paul Young's real name?
Paul Young. That's what his name is.
No.
Look. He told me that after he'd walked into the police at the Silver Moon Dance, he'd given them the first name that came into his head. Because of Zarek, they'd be looking for Paul Young, who didn't exist. And he said if ever anyone came asking, I was to call him Paul Young. And by God, that's what I'm calling him, because he'd kill me if I told you his real name.
All right, that's all.
Your keys, Vernon, at once. Tomorrow you can look for another job. I won't prosecute, but you'll get no reference.
I'm 48.
You had a good job here for life. You blew it. Your own fault. Get out.
Does he have a family?
Yes.
Unemployment is preferable to imprisonment.
How am I going to cope with the autumn carnival without him? Vernon knows the routine. He is the routine. He's been here so long.
I'll contact the police and tell them that Paul Young may arrive here at any time from now on.
I thought it was 2 o'clock.
No. Young may suspect that Vernon would clear off with the loot before he got here, so he could be here any minute.
Well, I'd rather not be around when he does.
More prudent if none of us were. We'll leave that to the police. Besides, Mr. Beach and I have a further appointment for this afternoon.
So, where are you dragging me off to now?
Well, I didn't think you'd want to miss out on the last piece of the jigsaw.
Ah, you know something you haven't told me.
Well, let's put it this way. We know where at least some of Kenneth Charter's scotch is.
Martineau Park, quite. That it got there delivered by Vintners Incorporated.
Mm-hmm. But we don't know where it went between being taken off Charter's tankers and being delivered by Vintners.
Except that it must be a bottling plant.
Yes.
You found the bottling plant.
Found a bottling plant, somewhere to start. I thought we'd take a recce this afternoon.
Yeah, but it's Sunday. There'll be no one there. You'd have to break in. Oh, no.
We'll see. Sometimes there's a caretaker. I'm good at government inspectors, even on a Sunday.
Oh, Lord. Where is it?
In Proof by Dick Francis, Nigel Havers played Tony Beach, George Parsons, Gerard, Jennifer Piercy, Flora, Stuart Organ, Paul Young, Tim Reynolds, Vernon, Brian Hewlett, Quigley, and David Goodland, the clerk and delivery man. Proof is directed by Matthew Walters.